Lord, may we hear your voice and know your presence among us this morning. Amen. I enjoy looking at tattoos. They're just wonderful things. A tattoo is not simply a piece of artwork, but it's a symbol that speaks to something deep within a person. One of my favorites is not so much a picture, so much as it is a grammatical symbol, the semicolon. Have you seen anyone wearing a semicolon? Now, a semicolon is not just a full stop on top of a comma. A full stop shows the end of a sentence. By its nature, a full stop is closed. There's nothing more to say. There's nothing more to add. But a semicolon, now that is a whole different story. A semicolon is a pause. It's a way to make a connection. It shouts that something else is following. You're not finished yet. Look out. See what's coming next. When someone wears a semicolon on their wrist or on their ankle, they are making a statement that their life is not over. That's why they've become a badge of pride to many in our world who struggle with things like depression, suicide, addiction, anxiety, or self-harm. It's a daily reminder that their story is not over. The death of Jesus was never a full stop. The resurrection makes it a semicolon. This is because God's work was not complete, finished, or contained by the death of Jesus upon the cross. There was always another chapter coming. The resurrection is a new beginning, a declaration of more to come. So I'd like to consider our readings today to see how the resurrection shifts us beyond the full stop of fear, shame, and exclusion, and into a space where new life begins. I can't begin to imagine what those women must have experienced walking to the tomb with those spices to finish the preparation for Jesus' burial. In so many ways, it must have felt like a full stop. They had walked with Jesus for years. Whenever Jesus spoke about his death, it must have filled them with fear. Fear is all-consuming. Fear swallows us whole. It leaves us alone and paralyzed. It brings everything in life to a grinding halt. When we are afraid, it's hard to see anything. It's hard to hear anyone. It's hard to move, and it's hard to speak when we are afraid. So when Jesus was arrested in the garden and betrayed by one of his own, the worst fears of the disciples were realized. When Jesus was hung on a tree and thrown into a borrowed grave, it must have felt like any hope for freedom died with him. That compassion was simply no match for iron nails. That justice was impotent when confronted by lies and violence. Although they walked to the tomb, expecting a full stop, what the women encountered was a semicolon. The stone was moved. Their beloved Jesus was gone. Someone else was in there. "Don't panic," said this mysterious figure, an understatement if there ever was one. The crucified one had become the raised one. "Go tell your disciples," said this figure, "especially Peter." that Jesus is going ahead of you to Galilee. The women flee because they were afraid. The women knew fear, like we all do. But while fear limited their vision, the women were still prepared to look up and look inside the tomb to face their worst fear. Although fear could have closed their ears, the women listened to this mysterious figure. Although fear could have frozen them to the spot, the women ran back. And while fear rendered them silent, it was only for a moment. We don't know when or how, but they must have found their voices at some point, because the disciples go on to Galilee, where they encounter the risen Jesus. Fear fools us into thinking that our lives are a closed book. But if we look at the women and hear their voice and go out to meet the risen one, well then, whatever end we are facing is really only the beginning. The resurrection is our semicolon. But it's not just fear that brings life to a shuddering stop. Shame does this to us too. Shame is that feeling of humiliation we get when we do something that someone else simply finds unthinkable, or when we are unable to do something that everyone takes for granted. Shame is that feeling of being the last person chosen for a sports team at school. Shame is something that haunts us, no matter our age. With shame, we just want to sink into the ground and disappear. Paul knew all about shame. He felt shame at sharing in Jesus' condemnation. He felt shame about rounding up all the first followers of Jesus and throwing them into prison. He felt shame about being so legalistic and unspiritual compared to all the other disciples who walked and talked and saw the risen Lord firsthand. When he describes himself in today's passage as the least, the last, and the undeserving, it is shame that is speaking. No, it's actually shouting. He describes himself as someone untimely born, a word that was quite often used in his day to describe the awfulness of a miscarriage or an abortion. While shame could have brought Paul to a full stop, the resurrection makes a new life possible. By the grace of God, Paul writes, I am what I am. He's not going to let God's grace go to waste. It is the resurrection that turns Paul around, so that rather finding condemnation or finger pointing or denunciation, he finds forgiveness and restoration and renewal. It is an encounter with the risen Christ that turns the persecutor of the faithful into a preacher of faith. It is the risen one who soaks up all that is dead and shameful within Paul so that new life can begin. Shame fools us into thinking that we are worthless. But if we listen to Paul and we hear what he says and we go out to meet the risen Christ, then we discover how valuable we are to God. It's because of God's love and forgiveness that life can grow. And that, my friends, is what the semicolon does. But it's not just fear and shame that stops us dead. Exclusion. Exclusion in our world and within the church destroys lives too. Exclusion reserves good things for the right people while pushing the wrong people just out the door. When we are told that we don't belong because of the color of our skin, because of our gender or our age or our ability or our orientation, then we find ourselves lost with nowhere to go. Cornelius knew the pain of exclusion. Earlier in the chapter, we see him as someone who is described as devout, someone who's generous, someone who prayed constantly, and to whom one day God spoke. But Cornelius is a Gentile. Not only that, he's a Roman soldier, a centurion, someone with blood on his hands. Many Pharisees would have considered someone like Cornelius to be someone that God would simply consider unsuitable and undesirable to be part of God's family, not only by virtue of his occupation, but because of who he is. But the risen Christ has other plans. He sends Peter to Cornelius, a man who had his own wake-up call about exclusion only a chapter earlier. What does Peter say to Cornelius? What does this Jewish follower say to this Gentile outsider? It's God's own truth. God plays no favorites. It makes no difference who you are or where you are from. If you want God and you are ready to do as he says, the door is wide open. The message he sent to the children of Israel, that through Jesus Christ, everything is being put together again. Well, he is doing it everywhere among everyone. When Peter invites the excluded Cornelius into God's family, it's not just Cornelius. God welcomes anyone and everyone who desires God, no matter their color, no matter their gender or age or ability or even their orientation. Exclusion fools us into thinking that we don't belong. But if we listen to Peter and we see Cornelius, we discover the risen Christ is the only one who is appointed as judge of the living and the dead. What kind of judge is this Christ? The good news is that Christ is not small-minded. He's not fixed on toting up broken rules, nor is he someone who gets any delight in shaming others. Jesus knows what it's like to be alive and to die. He is someone filled with grace and love and compassion who extends his arms to any and all who need it. So Easter is anything but a fairy story. The tomb was the full stop, but the resurrection is the semicolon, because it is the most unexpected, the most unsettling, unrepeated, and consequential event in all of human history. The resurrection overcomes all those things that bring our lives to a grinding stop. A betrayal by a close friend is not enough to stop Jesus. lies and posturing politicians, that won't stop him either. The injustice of a lynching, that won't stop him. Neither will violence or hate or religious blindness cause him to waver. The resurrection is God's life-affirming force, which swallows up death and all the powers of this world that threaten to destroy and denigrate and dominate us. The tomb did not bring God's work to a full stop. The way of love cannot be contained or destroyed by fear or shame or exclusion. God's Spirit broke Jesus free from the tomb. God's Spirit saw the seed that was planted and now gives birth to a great harvest. So on this resurrection day, may you find ways to leave whatever tomb you find yourself in behind. May you be set free from whatever fear or shame or exclusion blights your life. May you go out into Galilee to find the risen one who calls you there. Because it is the risen one who sets you free, who is full of compassion, and who works in this world for justice now and always. Amen.